AEW. Yeah, I really did get a sense of that, of the sharing and the camaraderie, and then you want to, if you want to talk about the emergency preparedness aspects of it, you as well as many of us lived through 9/11, you know, back in 2001, and the phone network, the cell phone network, they were full, and people couldn't contact their loved ones or people they cared about, and that I wasn't into amateur radio at the time, but I'm sure there were, you know, I'm sure that, you know, races was activated and all kinds of stuff to provide those redundant systems that, you know, people could communicate, because that's one use case that really stands out to me.
Point, and it takes more than one group when society has its legs knocked out from under them. And that's what happened on 9/11. We could only guess in the very beginning whether this was localized or whether how widespread it might be. When we understood, I recall the moment so keenly when we understood that it wasn't an accident, that it was on purpose, and that we were under attack. So many things fly through your mind, and instantly you become concerned about your own well-being. But then it goes to the well-being of your family members, wherever they might be at the time. And then maybe for some of us, it turned to the people who were directly affected, the people in the Twin Towers, the people on that plane that wound up in the ground at Shanksville. And those people who were just working in an office when a plane flew through the Pentagon. So many lives were changed, and we got close, even though we would never meet these people, we would never know them personally, but we became a larger family. We were more American on that day through force, an external force. We were more American that day than I think I've seen since. Another thing that Field Day is good for is to see antennas deployed quickly, efficiently, and that work as they're supposed to. So for a new ham, that had to be very eye-opening. You can take an antenna out to your backyard and deploy it and be on the air, at least in 15 minutes. It all, and it can come down just as easily if you have to. So preparing to do what we know how to do, yeah, that's what Field Day is, and I'm glad you got a chance to experience it. KK4JBQ.
I can't thank you all enough. I appreciate what the club does. Looking forward to talking to everybody again at the meeting, you know, whether it's Zoom or in person, next month at, you know, the Red Cross. I got to run on to bed. I got to get up in the morning and take care of the kids and get my job and stuff. But really appreciate the rag team tonight. And I really appreciated the Field Day this weekend. I mean, it was so much fun. So educational. It was great to put, you know, faces to names. And, I'm just looking forward to spending more time with every one of you. So, thanks again. This is KO4ZEW. I'm going to say 73 is a good night so I can get some rest and get back to work tomorrow.
W with KO4NUE and KK4JBQ. Great to hear from you tonight, and glad you popped in there. get yourself some good rest. KK4JBQ.
UE.
We, KK4JBQ. If you'll pardon me, Chad, I'm going to change my batteries real quick. JBQ.
UE. Okay, so it's not really a question. It's just I'm not sure what's happening here. I mean, I'm pretty sure what's happening, but it's a little bit conflicting, so just going to run it by you, and you tell me what you think is going on. So one of the participants made a contact during the event of field day. The contact's call was K3 Papa Kilo Golf on 80 meters in western Pennsylvania. When I looked the call sign up, the license is expired. By 7 years, expired. The license holder is under a female, Rebecca Baker. So my initial thought was, okay, well, somebody's operating, without a license. So I called the station back and had another well-experienced ham confirm the call. So I've had two stations at the field day event that confirmed the call sign. But my initial thought was, okay, well, somebody's using an expired call to talk or participate in the event. But it was a 5A station. And I'm not exactly sure what happened there. Any ideas?
All of that, it doesn't add up. Not unless you pull all the stops. Like, you know, I hate to say it this way, I honestly do, but the world is getting crazy, Chad. So the individual who was Rebecca when they initially got their license might be speaking with a different and deeper voice today. You know, hormones being what they are. But a 5A station, that's curious. Yeah, I don't know. That would mean 5 radios, I suppose. I don't know. That's curious. And then the 7-year lapse, that's far beyond the grace period. I think you're given 2 years grace after your license expiration where you can still have your call sign back. And without testing, you can just renew it within 2 years. But after that, certainly after 7 years, it goes back into the pool. So it goes back into the pool. Might have been a clerical error, although that's rare today with computers. It used to be very common to have a clerical error. That's a puzzle.
Okay, I agree. I'm not exactly sure. You know, an alpha is battery on battery. Typically, it's a club or a non-club portable. But you would think that, you know, a 5A station, that would at least be a legitimate call. So, not quite sure what to think about that. One little tidbit extra to go with that is that K3PKG, the female call that was under, is in York, Pennsylvania. The location of the QSO was listed as WPA, which is Western Pennsylvania. So the call address matches up with the location, but the license has expired. I don't know what to think about that. Okay, so let me move on to second observation / question.
Well, another thought that occurred to me, it might be an expired club call.
Why isn't it listed as a club call? Now, that's off of QRZ and the FCC database.
Exactly, yes. I was just trying to think how far do you have to go before it can make any sense? It really does not make any sense, and it's... I like everyone to be on the up and up. When I look somebody in the eye, I don't climb a ladder and I don't get on my knees. I want to look them straight in the eye. And that requires that they and I can speak frankly with one another and truthfully with one another. And it just doesn't seem that was happening. So I don't know whether you recorded that as a good one or as a no joy call or no joy contact. How did you handle that?
Keep in mind, now we're not keeping points here, but you know, I looked at this as a way to for training for me. So you know, maybe the next field day event, maybe I won't participate. So I took this opportunity to kind of learn all I could about it. So no, I did not take the call. I mean, you can't, right? I mean, if you can't validate the call, it's not a legitimate call, correct?
Ostensibly, it may not be a legitimate call for reasons that we don't understand. Or it may be legitimate for reasons we don't understand. It's just not obvious to us. And submitting a bad contact is, there's no further consequence than just not being given credit for that contact. You don't have quite enough information in an exchange during any contact to make a determination. If it should show some disparity in what we all understand to be correct, then it will not come back to you to take care of it. It will be taken care of by others. And if they were just making contact willy-nilly, going on about their ways, and most certainly, it would be pointed out, the fact that their call, that call, is a dead call. After 7 years, it's gone. But in 7 years, you know, I don't know how desirable that call might be, but it should have been recycled. You know, it in 7 years picked up by somebody else. KK4JBQ.
To prove this, I'm still looking through the regulations. But I'm pretty sure if you submit an inaccurate call, I'm pretty sure you're docked points. But like I said, I haven't been able to confirm that yet. I'm still digging through the rule books to see how all this is scored, you know. So with that, okay. So let me move on to the next, I guess, observation. Is I logged a 18A station. Gary reported a 13A station before I started logging. But my goodness, 13? These guys are serious. What do you think about that?
contest stations known because this is what they live for. They live for contesting. And Field Day is the biggest most widely known contest to exist in amateur radio. It's been that way from the beginning, I suppose. And it's okay to be contesty about it. I don't want to name the club, but there are clubs that when Field Day comes, it's all about the contest. Everything is for points. Your contribution, this is what eats into my gut. Your contribution is based on the amount of contacts you can present. Your very worth in the whole endeavor. That's not stated as such, but it comes across. It really comes across. There's so many other reasons why Field Day is important. Field Day is to communicate, I think most important, to communicate to your community that you are there, that you exist, that you are a resource, that you are capable. And a learning, just on top of all that, a learning opportunity for everybody to share what they know in an environment when what they know is being poured out in a big way, out of big buckets. It's being poured out on a fire, you know, because it's timed, 24-hour period, it's timed, and the preparations have to be successful in order for the event to be successful. Yeah, so Field Day is a lot of things, and I think down there on the bottom somewhere is contest, but some clubs do not feel that way about it. Oh, but anyhow, I don't know that I've even touched on your question, KK4JBQ.
No, that's okay. Alright, so here's the next observation that I noticed is let's take out the club calls, which will be your alpha stations. So if you take out all of the alpha calls, which were competing as a club, primarily club. It also lists non-club portable, but I take that as primarily club. If you take out all of the alpha stations, respectively, I was kind of shocked at the amount of echo stations that showed up. So alpha being a battery-operated club call, and Class E being a home station emergency power. There is a lot of echoes in here. And what do you think about that?
That's a sign of the times. I really do. And maybe a change of mindset. To operate on commercial power is so easy. You know, there are plugs on the walls in every house. And just about everybody has an extension cable to get it from another circuit if that's necessary. But it's quite an achievement, I think, to run your station on anything but commercial power. Power that you generate. Power that you take from nature, whether that be a water wheel or a wind turbine or a solar panel. All of these would qualify, and it's just excellent, I think. It's it makes me glad, is truly, that there are so many echo stations, really. And to get back to an answer, are you familiar with the, for number one, or for the last question, are you familiar with K3LR?
KL4NUE, KK4JBQ.
In Ohio is probably the best known cost test station in our hobby, and he probably has 30, but always growing his contest station. Huge, I mean, absolutely huge, 200-foot towers, you know, dozens of them, and 30, 40 radios in a room. And it's just amazing. It's that excessive thing that if you want to take a look at, you know, what I've pulled together here, I'm talking on an HT and have for years. And, you know, I'm the other end of the spectrum. But it's good. It's really good that there are some people who are so hog wild about contesting that they hold training sessions at K3LR. And he does Contest University. I'm trying to think of his name. He does Contest University, which is the same week as Dayton Senior. I think I've heard that pronounced. The two cities hyphenated now. We weren't too happy to lose Dayton as a place to have this. So I think for 1 year, before it was over for a couple of years because of COVID, but for 1 year we called it Xenia, and now it's Dayton Xenia. Xenia taking the back seat. Anyway, Contest University is all about contesting, how to do it in the best possible manner. Procedures. So, anyway, contesting is, and DXing together, is the reason why a lot of people get into the hobby. It is competition. And human beings love to compete. KK4JBQ.
Okay, so next observation is I had some really strange call signs come across the log. Of course, I, you know, verified each one. Total of four calls that have a problem. One registers as being in India. Alpha Tango 2 Alpha. Contact was made with Western New York, but when you put the call sign in, it shows up in India. So I have to assume that the wrong call was written. I could not get another operator to confirm the call, so that one I, you know, have to strike. But here's some of the calls that were very interesting to me. Call sign WW1 India. And KC3 Foxtrot Uniform November. KC3 Fun. I thought that one was pretty interesting. The guys made contact with Penn State University. Two stations in Canada. One Maritime Mobile in Canada. And I basically just, you know, ate the Western United States. I mean, just, you know, obliterated them, you know. Ohio and Connecticut, I mean, Ohio and Texas and, you know, out that direction. And also, you know, northern United States and Texas. I have not had an opportunity yet to see what states were not contacted, but that. I'm pretty sure that any 7 call, Area 7, I'm not seeing any 7 Area 7s on here. But pretty much the way I'm seeing it, the rest of the areas, they pretty much hit, and I mean hit pretty well, actually.
They did very well. I'm surprised at the number that you reported when checking into the net tonight. Numbers in the hundreds, even the thousands of contacts have been known to occur frequently. So, but it just emphasized to me that the focus was not on number of contacts, not on keeping a... a lot of people run field day with, let's say, 20 radios, and all of them networked, and everybody's contributing to one log. That takes some infrastructure. You can probably imagine what that takes. As much infrastructure, as much work as setting up antennas for all of those 20 radios. It is a big production, and anytime something like that is accomplished and done to the satisfaction of people who are involved, and that's the important thing. I was pleased when I understood that at least one club around here was maybe taking another view of field day, that it was not just a social gathering, but a gathering of people to commiserate, you know, the individuals would explore their friendships, make those eyeball cusos, just, you know, like the like ZEW just mentioned to us. That's important. It really is important. You know that. I know that. We both had our early experiences with people that we'd only heard on the air. It's a thrill. It's absolutely a thrill. Unless that's happened to you, you've never known it before. Only because, you know, you can go years. I've been talking to people on the radio for years, and I've never met them. And only here. Anyhow, there's some strange goings on with those call signs that you mentioned that are probably valid call signs, but they're out of our own country and out of our region as well. Can't explain that. KK4JBQ.
It's KL4NUE. I'd say it's an incorrect call, but I don't think it really matters. It just, you know, has to be removed from the log. You know, I mean, that's just, you know, right thing to do, I guess. Understanding they, you know, won't do in points, but okay. So, other interesting thing that I learned was a couple of the operators collected 2 calls with 3, which was, I guess, would be a 1x1 call, which. Initially, I thought, well, that's just not valid. But I talked with Gary about it, and Gary kind of explained how that worked. So, sure enough, came back and validated the calls, and they are, you know, they are valid calls. So, you know, I got an opportunity to learn, you know, about that. I kind of learned more about ARRL and kind of how they function in all of this. But one of the one-by-ones was W4R in Georgia and W0F in Kansas. And those calls are issued, you know, just for the field day event. They're not a person's amateur call. They're just issued for that event. After the event is over, those calls go back into the pool, I guess. KO4NUE.
JBQ with KO4NUE. Yeah, one-by-one calls, anyone who were originally issued one-by-one calls, they're long gone now. The one-by-ones are reserved and circulate. They have different assignments for different periods of time. They can be requested. They can be requested by organizations, by clubs, and I've even known them to be requested and awarded to individuals. If it's for celebration or acknowledgement of a special sort, you know, of a very special thing. Yeah, so that's not that terrible. But these out-of-country calls that you mentioned earlier, they are kind of curious. I think someone's trying to squeak under the door, you know, slide through that gap underneath the door. maybe cause trouble. I don't know. I really don't know. Because Field Day isn't recognized in all the world. It's only the United States and its possessions and whatever, and Canada. Those are the only ones I think that that count in the contest as such. So we're Region 2, and stations in Region 1, like Great Britain, for instance, it doesn't, I mean, maybe they would make a contact with someone. There's lots going on. I mean, the bands are full on Field Day more than any other day of the year. But their contact wouldn't count for the stations that they had made contact with, because they're not, well, they don't participate in Field Day. They have their own version elsewhere in the world. KK4JBQ.
Okay, so last observation. Because you remember sometime, I guess it's been 8, 9, 10 months ago, when we were having, you know, discussions every Tuesday night with Walt about this and that. And, well, one of the discussions we were having was, you know, one of the questions I had was, you know, at what time is the best time to talk on the frequency because of, you know, kind of what's going on. So, and I mean, I got Dave responded to that, and I mean, I remember everybody's answer. So I started this little log, you know, okay, I want to learn everything I can about 80 meters and 20 meters, 40 meters, that kind of thing. But here's the interesting thing, the most interesting thing that I have been able to see out of all of this, all of the logs here. So the first log entry was at 16:13 local time, and that was a Canadian Maritime Mobile. Let me let my radio drop. 13 to 20001, which would be 8 o'clock local. All contacts were made on 20 and 40 meters. But starting at 8:09, you can see where it transitions from 20 meters into 80 meters. And when 80 opened up, my goodness, it was just like, it was like a Hail Mary. I mean, it was just at that point, you know, from 8:01 until midnight, it was, you know, nothing but 80 meters. So, and then the next morning, you can see where 80 meters starts to drop off, and you move back into 20 and 40. So that was very interesting. So what do you think about that?
What you observed there was maybe that it had a few contributors to that phenomenon, but most certainly one of them was the gray line. Most certainly beginning at 10 meters, but usually at lower frequencies. The ionosphere refracts the signal back to Earth. And this is the only reason that you can hear a station long path. If you ever hear a station and there's an echo, the echo itself is evidence that you're receiving one signal twice. You're receiving it on the short path to you, but you're also receiving it on the long path to you. It circles the globe. It keeps skipping all around the globe. Rather than escape our atmosphere, escape the influence of Earth, and go out into the cosmos forever and ever. So the gray line, it's famous for long-distance contacts. And you can find a gray line map for any particular time of day. Usually you get it for current time if you ask for a gray line map. Excuse me. And then there are some devices. I can't remember the name of it. It's pretty famous. You can hang it on your wall, and it shows a real time gray line for the Earth. You get a pole to pole, north south, and east west view of the Earth and the current position of the effects of the gray line, which is that terminator between dark and light, between night and day. And that's when 80 meters will give it up. The ionosphere becomes different, and not only the ionosphere, but the layers in the atmosphere will, as evening falls, the F1 and the F2 layer combine and become stronger. The D layer it almost becomes invisible, no effect there, and the signal just go out into space. So there's, I don't know, would you call that, that's not astronomic, except the sun is involved. It's a geo effect, it's an Earth effect. That's my big guess. What do you think?
I don't want this to sound harsh, because it's not meant that way at all. Is that not necessarily having the discussion about what's happening. I understand I asked, you know, what your observation was, but my point here is that you can clearly see, and I mean it is clear, that when you look at the time hacks between the contacts on 20 and 40 meters, they're typically, you know, 8 to 10 minutes apart. Not all of them, but I would say on average. And some of that probably is because of pileup and having to find a frequency to talk on, and, you know, that takes time. But when 80 meters opened up, it was just like, you know, bam, 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 bam. The other interesting thing that I'm seeing here is I can see experience starting to show on the logs. So, and let my radio drop and I'll explain what I mean by that. So, with the contacts that I logged, now there were other contacts made previous to me logging for the club over the repeater. I want to be clear about that. 77 contacts that I logged were made. 63 of those were made by one operator. When you can see in the log, the operator that made these contacts is a new AM technician class. You can see him starting to struggle with the time hacks on 20 or 40 meters. You can see that the time between one contact to another increases over time. Then all of a sudden, let me let my radio drop here. 8:01, after, okay, how do I word this? Okay, from 16:13 to 20:00, you have a young operator, looks like, by the time hacks, struggling to make contacts. He's doing it, but he's having to work for it. Then you see at 20:00, close to 20:00, W4DJW pops in on 80 meters. And when the younger operator, I'm assuming by the log here that Dave showed the younger operator, okay, here's what you do when, you know, you're struggling on these frequencies, let's go down to here and try. And they've made three contacts on 80 meters, I'm assuming to probably show the young man, and then, bam, the next 15 or 20 are 80 meters, and I mean they're almost back to back. So you can definitely see where the leadership of the club is starting to shine through there as well.
That's one of the big characteristic benefits of getting people together, the experts, if I can call them that, and the beginners, the old-timers and the newbies, the Elmer and the Elmer E. And that's marvelous. If you just stand back and watch something like that happen, it is just marvelous to see. And they're both getting what they want, but also they're getting what they need, both of them. It is what, I mentioned Contest University earlier, it is what that's all about. It's how to slam through, to push on the wall
If there's a wall between you and a rat-a-tat-tat, that is rapid-fire contacts, if there is a wall, there are ways to push it, and to push it, and to push it, and finally to cause its movement. And you start feeling like it's better now, it's easier now. There is one YouTube channel that I'll recommend to you if you've not watched this guy before, K8MRD. If you just type that into YouTube, his channel comes up. Kilo 8 Mike, I lost it. Mike Romeo Delta. He does the best activation of summits or parks on the air, SOTA or POTA, that I've ever seen. He can do 200 an hour and not break a sweat and not be out of breath. It seems so natural and so comfortable, and that's the kind of skill that can be accomplished with focus. I subscribe to that guy's channel purely on the evidence of his determination to gather that skill, to speak clearly, because these are exchanges that count for points, whether it's an activation of a summit or an activation of a park. They matter to both both individuals in the QSO. It's pretty amazing. It's thrilling to see and to watch. It's so excellent, and of course both of these. You're taken through the deployment of the antenna and the equipment that's being used, how everything is chosen, how well it fits together, what it can accomplish in the right hands. And this guy's got, he's got the right attitude toward it. So I was listening, just to bring this around to circle a little bit, let me let this drop. Day, and I must say that your skills are impressive. I'll just put it plainly. Just put it right there in your face. Your skills are impressive. The information that you passed across the airwaves was concise. It was very ordered, of course. But that takes skill. And I'm sure Mars has something to do with that, a recognition of an obligation, a duty. But how important that is, that you get it right the first time. So I guess I really do appreciate your phone call to clue me into what was happening. But that's what I enjoyed most. I enjoyed just sitting and listening to the exchange and the passing of information. I don't know. And I have to say it this way. In no small way, that was my field day today. Or yesterday, I guess it was. In no small way, that was my field day. KK4JBQ.
Yeah, roger that. And I think Dave and Gary understood that some members can't come for, you know, whatever reasons. And you're just trying to find a way to include them so that they could at least be a part of what was happening. you know, I think that was really neat. I think them agreeing to that was just kind of shows, you know, what kind of people they are. Just kind of watching out for other members that they can't be there. You know, it's not ideal that they, you know, that they're not there, but it's something, you know what I mean. But all right, so one more observation, and then I'm on probably bring it to a close, I guess, is that I can clearly see in my eyes looking at this log, it is obvious where this one operator, and I told him we'd give him bragging rights on Tuesday night for, you know, the contribution he made this weekend. I can clearly see where, with the time hacks and the contacts that were made, you can see a hand of leadership or experience. Someone is helping him make these contacts. And I'm gonna just go ahead and say you can obviously see where Leroy, K-A-5-W-L-L, contributed to, you know, showing how to make these contacts. Then you can see there's a gap in there where he was under Gary's tutelage. And things kind of speed up a little bit and start to slow down because I guess the bands are starting to change or pileups or whatever. And then you can see where Dave jumps in, and things kind of just move really rapidly at that point. So, I mean, that's just kind of interesting data to look at. I kind of thrive on stuff like that. You put it in a certain format, you know, you can see a lot. But, you know, I just think that was very interesting and very neat. Just very impressive to me that the older hams recognize that they need to contribute and or to pass along their knowledge, and that is clear. I mean, it is clear in the logs that definitely happened.
Chad, it's KK4JBQ with KO4NUE. You make an observation that's at one time it's obvious, but at the same time it's thrilling. That this can happen, that this does happen. It's a rare instance. I'm afraid to say it is. It saddens me that it's a rare thing to happen. But how can you, the thing that comes to my mind instantly is how can you cause this to happen more often? We have in the Blue Ridge Club, which I used to be an active member of, we have tried different ways to increase contact between the Elmer and the new operator. And nothing as yet has, well, nothing to the point where I was no longer involved came to mind that actually worked.
pairing individuals is, we saw that as the way to do it. Having a body of people who were willing to tutor or Elmer and have them ready for contact, for putting them with a younger person. A younger person who has questions or a younger person who needed from the ground up an introduction to the hobby. And if you're sitting beside somebody at their station, in their home, in their shack, it will impress you more than anything you could watch other people do, because it's a one-on-one situation. There's a reason why that works ever since the day of Aristotle, when he was, distributing knowledge, a one-on-one situation or small group situation, perhaps even better, was utilized and became famous with Aristotle. But that didn't work. What works is just, I think, from what I've experienced, it is taking advantage of a natural developing relationship. If some younger person has a question and some experienced person has an answer, it's a bit of magic when that's shared and a relationship starts, a respect and a desire for knowledge and a willingness to fill that need. It's marvelous.